Good morning, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Larry Kay. I'm calling from Chicago, and I will be the host for the presentation today. Today is Sunday, December 21st, 2025. The share ID numbers for Friday, December 19th, are the following. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting, that number is 23,051. That's 23051. And then the 10 a.m. meeting on Friday, 23,052. That's 23052. This morning, A Vision for You presents Step 11. It works. It really does. You know, once someone has a spiritual awakening or a spiritual experience, alcohol, or in our case, food, moves from the is your dilemma to the was your dilemma. It's really a miraculous thing for sure. But can we revert back to the is column? If you rest on your laurels, if we don't follow the instructions as laid out in this book, you bet. If we begin to coast, the book tells me so and my experience tells me so. Absolutely, I can revert back. If we take a look at some folks, I mean, even Roseanne S., our founder, began to coast. And she found herself, she had a spiritual awakening, some sort of change sufficient to drive out the obsession, but it came back. She moved from the was column to the is column. The disease did. I have to have a healthy respect for the disease, not fear for it, but, you know, there are people, even in programs, some that you've met, my sponsor, moved from the was his dilemma column to the is. Now, it's been quite a number of years, but he told me about it. He'll probably tell you. I mean, he never gets any calls, so call him up. He'll tell you about moving from the alcohol food was column to the is column. He rested. He told me about it. Nobody can stay in a perpetual state of was if they don't continue in 10, improve in 11, and practice in 12. Page 85 tells me that. It's not conjecture. It's not my opinion. It says it's easy, page 85, it's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. You know, stop doing the work. We're headed for trouble if we do. Alcohol, food is a subtle foe. We're not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on something, contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. So we got to do some things. And it's laid out in the book. I don't have to figure out what the blueprint is. It's in the book. Step 10's in the book, instructions 11, we're going to hear from Ken, in the book. And part of recovery seems to be about unmasking comfortable illusions. And that, my friends, is one of the comfortable illusions. If I get to a spiritual island, let's call this island recovered, and I stay in that, you know, that I get to stay in that perpetual state of was, in the was column, was my dilemma. Wrong. Not a little wrong, dead wrong. Deadly disease. And perhaps the most entrenched, comfortable illusion that we embrace so tightly at times is the idea that if we do the bare minimum, we're safe. Again, I'm not trying to create fear, but a healthy respect for the disease. You are safe, contingent upon doing some things. I don't need to fear the recurrence of the disease, but let's just say I better have, again, a healthy respect for the disease. The big book tells me that the steps are designed to produce what's referred to as an essential psychic change. And that change is sufficient to bring about recovery from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Now, according to the text, this is not just any ordinary change. The big book refers to it as a vital spiritual experience. Page 27 tells me it's where there appears to be huge emotional displacements and rearrangements. Something is changed with God's help in my work with my emotional displacements and rearrangements. So if you're wondering what our God-given emotions have to do with anything, read page 27 and Dr. Jung's account that Bill gave such credence to. Here's what Jung said about emotions. He said, when the spiritual phenomenon occurs, quote, ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were once the guiding forces of the lives of these men, are suddenly cast to one side. So these innate, inborn emotions and other inborn cognitive capabilities that God gave us, be supplanted. They're not working as intended. In other words, in people like us, Jung is stating unequivocally that these innate emotions and attitudes have become a barrier to God flowing to me. I'm blocked off. Again, page 27, these emotions and attitudes are suddenly cast to one side and a completely new set of motives begin to dominate us, right? Begin to dominate them. And when these emotions and attitudes build up in non-alcohol people, they're fine. They'll never result in a compulsion to treat, to drink, or to eat. However, when the emotions, as Jung talked about, the attitudes build up in folks like us, we're driven to the substance again and again. We're blocked off from the sunlight of the spirit. And that's why it's critical to study and apply the steps in 10, 11, and 12 as they're laid out that will keep us right with God, ourselves, and with others. Joining us this morning to share some valuable suggestions on step 11 from the text, he's going to thread that together with his personal experience. I'd love to hear Ken. Is Ken W.H. He's a recovered compulsive overeater from North Carolina. Ken is dedicated to the 12 steps and the 12 traditions as a way of life. So it's with much gratitude that we welcome him to the line this morning. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Larry. Am I loud and clear or clear?
You're loud and clear, Ken. You're coming through great. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. My name is Ken W.H. I am recovered compulsive eater in North Carolina. Grateful to be here today to talk about step 11. And the title of this talk is step 11. It works. It really does. And the reason I emphasize that is because I'm looking at it from the perspective of step 11, starting on the bottom of page 85 of the big book, and where it says step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. And then we get a couple pages, then we get to the end of the chapter, but not the end of the steps. And it finishes up with, we do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. It works. It really works. And I connect the works, it really works, with step 11, not the entire program, because we haven't even gotten to step 12 yet. But it seems to me that the concept that it works, it really works, is being directed is prayer and meditation. So that's the perspective I come from. That might not be everyone else's, but that's okay too. For myself, a little brief history. I never stopped eating before or after I got sober, and that was my first major addiction to approach. But I never stopped eating. I was not one who, while being involved in my other addiction, lost my appetite. Never did. Never lost my appetite. In fact, I didn't let it get too terribly far out of reach. So I ate my way through my other addictions, and I spent many, many years in recovery, and I have been 100% abstinent in my other addiction for over 40 years, but I'm looking at 5.5 years of entire abstinence in OA. So you can do the math, and that's a whole lot of years of being around OA, started back in 84, but not in it, and not putting in the time and energy necessary to make the connections across addictions. That didn't mean that I didn't learn a lot in the other programs. I learned the steps. I learned a lot of things. I just didn't apply them in a helpful or healthy way when it came to food. So I allowed my thinking and my rationalization and my lying to myself to interfere with any reasonable chance to get abstinence in OA. I was for many, many years, I would identify myself as a recovering compulsive eater, but I was eating sugar, and that was okay. That was a part of my food plan. I had never fully looked at or was invited to look at, particularly the foods that triggered my allergy. I spent too many years blocking out any information that might have come that would have been helpful in that respect until I got to the vision meetings and hunkered down on the doctor's opinion, which finally convinced me that I had an allergy of the body to particular foods and behaviors. And I thank God that I got to that place. There was a time in my recovery where I was convinced that I could just take care of everything all by myself. Thank you very much. I wasn't going to need your help or anyone else's help, for that matter, with respect to my food. Besides, you weren't going to tell me what to eat or not to eat. And I was at one time confronted by a very perceptive man who was interviewing me and my wife in the midst of some of our struggles, and he just turned and looked at me. I'm sitting there on the couch with my arm over the back and looking very comfortable, and he turned and looked at me, and he said, "Ken, what are you afraid of?" And I said, "I'm not afraid of anything." And if you're all laughing and you want to laugh out loud, you can do that. I was a scared little kid but didn't know it, and I wasn't going to let you know it. I said I wasn't afraid of anything, and I didn't have any idea what I was talking about. Some of my journey with this spiritual life, I grew up and went to church, just like any good kid, I guess, back in those days, a good Protestant kid, whatever. I sang in the choirs. I loved to sing, and music was what drew me to the church on a regular basis. In fact, I had a sense of belonging to the choir and to the choir director, called her Mama Herman, and she acted like a mother to us all, and I needed that, because my mother was a beautiful woman and loved us dearly, but she wasn't overly approachable in many ways. But I felt like I fit in, and I loved singing, so I just kept singing, and I knew all the words. I learned classical literature in Latin, memorized everything else, all about God and spirit and the mystery of faith and all those sorts of things. But it was the music, and I wasn't ingesting, if you will, the meaning and intent behind all that information. And frankly, once I got into addiction, I just completely ignored my upbringing in the church, walked away from it. It was my choice, and it was my wisdom, as profound as it wasn't, and my darkness that I walked into when I walked away from a lot that I didn't understand, a lot that I just wasn't, to be honest, overly interested in. And I walked away into my own darkness and got really involved into addiction. And it wasn't pretty. My partner and I got married and didn't darken the doors until 11 years later. We both walked away and helped each other do that, so to speak. But then recovery happened, and it was a beginning. And there was lots of floundering around and searching for me. In the midst of all this floundering and searching, I felt a call to go to seminary, and I did. And I gained lots and lots and lots of knowledge about God, but I knew him not, but I knew about him. There wasn't any intimacy or sense of closeness in that relationship, in that I didn't have the kind of relationship that knowing, the knowledge that I had didn't translate to the knowing that I understand from the Hebrew language, that sense of knowing had a deeper meaning. It had the sense of intimacy. It was used as a euphemism for sexual intimacy between man and woman back then, and it was a knowing of deep intimacy, closeness, intensity. It just had everything involved in it, and that's the kind of knowing I lacked, and that's the kind of knowing that I have come to understand over the years in a way that I couldn't have imagined. I didn't know I didn't know, so to speak. So anyway, in chapter 12 chapter 11, the 11th step in the 12 and 12 starts out with it says that prayer and meditation are our principal means of conscious contact with God. Bingo. That's hitting the nail right on the head. Nothing confusing about that statement as far as I'm concerned. Prayer and meditation are our principal means. That doesn't mean it's the only, but it's the principal means of conscious contact with God. I have come to grasp that and understand that that's the best way to know God, in that intimate way that I longed for so much. I was just so lost out in left field, didn't know what I was going to do. And here I am, recovered in another program, completely clean, and making my way through the theological depths, and I'm still not in conscious contact with the God of my understanding today, and I longed for it at some level. I didn't know that I really longed for it, but at some level, I think deep inside, it was going on. And if you read the step 11 in the 12 and 12, Bill kind of treats prayer and meditation as forms of sustenance for life. And he talks about it in terms of the air and water and light and food, and that those things are vital, life-giving to me as a human being, as a human body. And he treats prayer and meditation that way in the spiritual sense, that without it, without the prayer and meditation, the chances of sustaining life become slimmer and slimmer over the years. The further I am away from God, the less alive I am. And that's what I believe today, and I believe that's what Bill's sort of saying here. And he suggests that we use our constructive imagination to visualize our spiritual objective before moving forward. In other words, and he uses the building a house, you got to have the plans and make all the plans and get everything in place before you start to make sure that you can finish the task. And he's suggesting the same thing for prayer meditation, that this is a principle, a foundation, a cornerstone, if you will, to the project that I imagine, my objective imagination, looking ahead to what my spiritual life or what my relationship to God, in fact, could be. And that's where I have to set the objectives of my spiritual development and spiritual growth. And I'm reminded, this is important for me, to set the objectives and looking ahead. Back in step two, we're told that those of us who have recovered came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity or solve our problem, as it says in the big book on another page. And that's a start. That's a start. Step two is not step 11. And the coming to believe that we talk about in step two, as far as I'm concerned and the way I read it, is we come to believe that a fact, that there is a power that is greater than me that will solve my problem or restore me to sanity. It says that. It doesn't say that I came to believe in a power, that power, or any power for that matter. It just asks me, it says that I came to believe that it was possible, that this higher power existed and would solve my problem. Here in step 11 is that process, at least the way I read it, the process of coming to believe in, if you will, to believe in that power, to trust that power, to have relationship to that power that is life-giving, vital. It is. It just brings life to me to think of it that way, that's no longer an issue of the fact of this power. I'm at step 11. I've had spiritual experience or awakening, and I am abstinent. So I'm past the fact of that power being great enough to solve my problem. I'm now at the place of learning to live in and with that power in a way that is life-transforming. It's just changed who I am. I am not the guy that I look back on and see. And I know what I was like. And when I tell a story, I tell what I was like, what happened to me, and what I'm like today. And I know what I was like, and it wasn't a pretty picture. But today, I see myself as a recovered man of God, and that's a miracle beyond absolute belief. And on as I continue this with just a little bit from looking at the big book for a second, if I go back to page 69 in the big book, there we're talking about, we've just gone through, we've been identifying the steps, what they are, we're in the how it works, and then it says, and this is really important, whatever our ideal turns out to be, and this is in the section on sex conduct, and it talks about having ideals of what that might look like, but it says whatever that our ideals turn out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it, whatever that ideal is. And then on page 70, it says we earnestly pray for the right ideal. This is important for me. This has to do with something I bring up as a topic sometimes, or at least in my own head, that this slogan that has come around, and I've heard often in meetings, is it's progress, not perfection. And unfortunately, that's not something you're going to find anywhere in the big book or the 12 and 12 for that matter. It doesn't say that, and it doesn't intend that either. I think when you say, when I hear it said that it's progress, not perfection, what's the it? I sense that it is supposed to be some reality, some fact. It's progress, not perfection. I think that misses the point of what Bill was trying to say on page 60 when he said, after the steps, and he says, we are not saints. The point is we're willing to grow along spiritual lines, and the principles we have set down are guides, and this is a matter of semantics, maybe, but it makes all the difference in the world to me. The principles we have set down are guides to progress, not progress, like a destination, like guides to Walmart or something. These are guides to progress so that I can claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection, that I've reached that ideal goal that I've set for myself. The steps tell us to set those high ideals, to look up to the high ideals that are of God, HP. And so that has helped me a lot to understand that I'm dealing with guides to progress toward moving forward toward a goal, the beautiful goal of spiritual perfection. I can't even imagine what that might look like, but boy, that's something certainly to look forward to someday. And so that's just a personal reflection of my own, but I sense that if I get caught up with this a real animosity toward the word perfection, I'm setting myself up for a certain degree of failure. I'm not going to get as far as I want to go if I set my sights too low. I got to set them high. I got to keep looking up to what God has in mind for me, which is the best that there can be for me. My well-being is what I believe to be God's will for me. The best for me, the best for you, the best for everyone else is that sense of the ideal, the perfect creation, if you will, the Edenish sense of how we got started. But so I'm looking for that. We got to be willing. We got to keep moving ahead. On the 12 and 12 and page 68, it says the remaining 11 steps after step one, after we've surrendered completely, which is the only one we can do 100%, so to speak, that the remaining 11 steps state perfect ideals. We shall need to raise our eyes toward them. So I got to be looking further and beyond me. But if you want to get right down to it, I need to abandon, and this is was a really difficult thing for me, to abandon my limited objectives and walk toward and into God's perfect plan for me. I was convinced I wasn't going to be capable of meeting high ideal objectives, so I set my objectives pretty low. And I lived in a middle of the road kind of way, never overachieving, but overworking for sure, but never overachieving until I started to really let go. At seminary, something must have been going on in there. I wanted to learn. I couldn't stop reading and taking in information and learning more and more and more about God. But something must have been happening inside, because I started to move to a place where all of that knowledge was driving me into a darker place, it seemed. I went on what I called the dry drunk for several years. I was sober. I was eating. I was not a happy camper, and I wasn't the most pleasant person to be around in my recovery, my sobriety. And so something was obviously missing. All this knowledge was not bringing me happiness. I was not happy, joyous, and free as was promised in the book. And I thought maybe that would just come automatically. But that's not the way this thing works. Unfortunately, it doesn't come that simply. It does require my my investment in my own well-being. Knowing that God wants the best for me, I need to invest myself into that principle and move toward it. And that's what I believe step 11 is at bottom line all about. Step 11, it's easy when I read the big book part of this step 11 to get bogged down, and I think sometimes we do, get bogged down in our debates about inventory. What's the 11-step inventory, and what's the 10-step inventory, and when do you do which? And we can get stuck in that, I think. I did, trying to figure it out and trying to sort out the paragraphs, which seem at times to be a little mixed up or that they've just kind of come all together into one concept of inventory. And inventory is indeed super important on a daily basis. As far as its purpose in step 11, and this took me a long time to come to terms with, as far as it, with respect to step 11 and inventory, I do need to prepare for the day ahead. And that's the part of step 11 in the big book that I usually spend my time with, on awakening. Let us think about 24 hours ahead, looking forward. What are going to be the challenges that I face where I'm absolutely going to need to rely on the presence of the God of my understanding right next to me so that I can navigate all of the challenges, the doubts, the fears, the grand ideas that come into my mind sometimes that need to not be there. That sense of inventory, in other words, looking into the day, looking ahead, is the way I understand and look at step 11. I know it talks about retiring at night, looking back over the day. That's fine. I tend to lean more on this concept. I heard someone recently say that, how did he say it? He said something to the effect, I'll get it in a minute. Anyway, I'm looking for my note on it. It had to do with step 10 being, the step 11 looks back. Here it is. Step 11 is a look, he said, step 11 is a look back at step 10 daily. And I look at that a little differently. In step 11, I'm seeking to improve my conscious contact with God. And that means growing and moving ahead at what God's will is for me now and into the future. And God is at the center of step 11, the way I understand it. Higher power is the center of step 11. God is the focus to which my attention is drawn and intended to be drawn. Step 10 in a sense, puts the focus back on me, and that's where it doesn't need to be. It puts the focus back on me. It's hard for me to think that having been brought to a place of really wanting to know intimately my God and his will for me, that I should go backward to step 10 to identify and make changes to my behavior, thereby building character. But that's more about my relationship to you than it is to God, at least the way I see it. Step 11 brings me one step closer to God's ideals for me. As I progress toward that goal of perfect union with the God of my understanding. That's a critical point of view for me that took years to get to. I had to set a lot aside about me. Step 10s, I can get stuck thinking about whether or not I even need to do one and trying to think about, is this worth calling somebody about or is this not worth calling somebody about? Is this going to help me? Is this not going to? That's about me. That's me, 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 me. And I need to look at step 10 from the perspective of step 11, where step 10 is just a tool to help me to grow, to change, to move into my life, my vitality, to move into that life with God, looking ahead, visioning what God has for me, and trying my best to come to terms with what God's will is for me. And I can ask that question every moment of every day. I can ask it in the present, being aware of what it might mean for the future. In other words, this decision I'm about to make, as I'm standing somewhere at 12 noon, this decision I'm about to make, is it good for me? Is it good for you? Is it in the best interest of my journey toward God and that relationship with God? In other words, I see step 11 as being the means to become of maximum usefulness to God and others, and to move beyond my stuff, which will, I'm convinced that if I get hooked up with God's will as completely and perfectly as I can, as I'm capable, and I know God's capable, my personal behavior is going to change for the better. And I will be transformed, and I will be a different person. And God will do that in me with not a whole lot of work if I am in direct personal relationship with the God of my understanding, seeking through prayer and meditation, however you define those two words. And I'm not going to try to define them for you. I know what they mean to me, and I'm sure you have ideas about what prayer and meditation are. And there are definitions, and I can go to Funk and Wagnall or whoever, and I can look them up. But that's not what's most important to me. What's most important is that I use them, that I take the guidance of the ages, if you will, to pray and meditate, and to embrace that process as being good for me, even if I don't feel inspired. I don't have to think about my feelings here. I'm doing this so that I can have a personal relationship with the God of my understanding, and that I can improve my relationship to that higher power. And that's what I believe step 11 is all about. And it's to improve my, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact. Contact. One, singular. My conscious contact with the God of my understanding. This is a singular process here. This is where I really get down and dirty with God. You know, this is the time, because I'm going to be moving into the rest of my life from here. I'm going to be moving beyond the primary levels of the primary school of recovery. I'm moving into graduate school when I get to 11. I'm going beyond. I'm getting ready to go out and let others know that there is a life to be lived, a vital, growing, nurturing life to live beyond active addiction. My goodness, it's a gift. The 11th step doesn't mention anybody else. I know it starts with we, but that's just this corporate sense of the writers. But it only mentions God. But what's so interesting, and that I've come to experience, and I hope it's true, and that others can recognize it, that by practicing step 11, improving my conscious contact with God, others, you and other people, will receive benefits beyond your wildest dreams, their wildest dreams, because I have become of maximum service to God and others. I have become a different person. I have become a recovered compulsive eater, alcoholic, well, the list goes on. I become that by this time that I'm in step 11 and consciously seeking to improve my relationship to God by prayer and meditation so that I can be of usefulness to somebody else, as well as to myself. Let's face it. I once heard a person say, and I, you know, there's debate on this thing, and it talks about, you know, when we make our amends list, we got to put ourselves on that list. Somewhere on that list, I got to make amends to myself. And I heard people say, you know, I'm at the top of that list. I got to put myself there first, or I'm not going to get anywhere with the others. And I heard a guy once say, he said, no, I put myself at the bottom of the list when I'm making my amends to try to sort out and straighten out my past. And he says, by the time I get to the end of my list where I am, and I have done all of these other amends, I have made the best possible amends to myself that I can even think about making. In other words, by doing the process, by seeking through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God, I am being changed, and it will make a difference in every relationship I have and have had. It will make a difference in the way I look at those relationships from the past, because I am in today and I am moving forward. I'm moving upward, because I'm seeking something higher than myself. I'm looking toward this ideal, this higher way of being, the higher self. This is all about growing in this relationship to the God of my understanding, that the God that not only is personal and intimate to me, but is the God that has the power and has had the power to restore my sanity. Because I was nuts. Pardon the reference. I was goofy. That sounds better. I don't know of any goofy food. But I guess I can't express that as any stronger than I have. And I imagine that's probably enough, because you're probably getting a little weary of Ken talking about step 11. But it has become a central, fundamental, and it, as it said at the beginning of the step in the 12 and 12, prayer and meditation are our principal means of conscious contact with God. So however, whatever method you choose to pray or meditate, I don't know that there's a wrong way to do it, because it's an effort and it's an attempt to improve conscious contact with God. And that can't be wrong, as far as I'm concerned. And I probably said enough, and that's all I have. Thank you, Larry, for setting it up, and thanks for your service. I'll pass.
Thanks so much, Ken. So appreciative. We're grateful that you took time to present this morning on Step 11. Thank you so much. And please stick around. A couple of things before we go to transition to our question, to our Q&A. We will ask Ken for his contact information at the end of the recorded portion of presentation. So please stay tuned for that. So let's now transition to a Q&A phase here. And if you have a question for Ken, questions only, please press star one and give me your first name and last initial. Who has a question for Ken this morning?
Ted, New Jersey.
Veronica
B. B. Okay.
Tony
okay,
B.
I'll tell you who I. Hey, Tony.
Sally A.
Names of that.
Ted from New Jersey.
Let's hold off for a second so I can say the name, so you don't have to repeat your name, because I wrote down a bunch here. So I heard Rivka, Ken, Veronica, Pete, Tony, and Sally. Who else?
Chanel T.
Chanel. And who else?
Ted from New Jersey.
And Ted. Okay, thanks, Ted. All right, let's stop there. Here's the lineup with questions this morning, at least the folks that I heard. I heard Rivka, Ken, Veronica, Pete, Tony, Sally, Chanel, and Ted. So hopefully I got them all. Let's start with, please, if you're not Rivka, please mute your line again. And Rivka, you got a question for Ken. Good morning. Rivka, press star one.
Okay, sorry, I thought I was unmuted.
There you are.
Anyway, yeah, thanks so much, Larry, for all your service, and Ken, for just a wonderful and helpful presentation. So my question is, when you said, you know, on considering our plans for the day, you know, and you ask, what are the challenges I'm facing today that I need God's help for? That's a great question. I'm just wondering if you could expound a little bit about, maybe with personal examples of what, how that looks in your life.
Oh, thank you, Rivka. I'm assuming I'm still unmuted.
yes, you are.
Thank you. Just a simple example is the next meal. Let me put it this way. At the beginning of the week, I plan out my week for food. So I know what's coming each day. And that helps me. That's planning ahead. That's starting my day and saying, okay, here's a place that I could make a decision, but I don't have to because I've already made it. I've planned ahead for it. Or I'm going to be going to some kind of a business meeting, let's say, or whatever, or some kind of a meeting with other people. And I know that there are some personalities in this meeting that they test me well, and I know that it's possible that something could be said that's going to really touch some places in me. I'm ready for it. I pray to God for the right, healthy response to whatever takes place. That's looking ahead into my day and planning to be the best I can be in the day and be aware of when that in fact challenges are going to come. Especially this time of the year with respect to food. Let's face it, there's no place I can walk where it isn't or it isn't on TV. I'm aware that those times are going to come, those events are going to happen, those personalities are going to come into my life. How do I prepare for it today to be the best I can be? That's the way I look at looking into the day and planning ahead.
Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks for the question, Rivka. So I don't know if I heard a Ken or I mixed that up with Ted, but is there another Ken out there that had a question? Okay, let's move on.
There's only one.
Is Ted? I think it was Ted?
Yeah, Ted. Go ahead, Ted, and then we'll follow that up with Veronica. Go ahead, Ted.
Okay, thanks, Larry. Thanks, Ken, for your message. So I'm warning my therapist of 14 years, it's affected me a lot. But as far as doing my 11th step in the morning, I kind of got bored and lost the hunger for God in the morning, you know. And I was just wondering, like, does that ever happen to you when your relationship with God is, like, yet stale or, like, you need to revive it or – Do you change your routine up in the situation? Like if you're, you know, and what do you do when you feel like you're not getting a good quality relationship with God and the meditation? Like, you know, if that makes any sense.
It does. And thank you, Ted. Good question. Sure. There are ups and downs. There are times when I'm not paying a whole lot of attention to the disciplines I have in place. Including prayer and meditation, where I just go through the motions. I'm aware that happens sometimes. I'm a human being, and I have different moods, and I wake up in different conditions. Sometimes my body cooperates, and I feel pretty good, and other times everything hurts. And that affects, that has an impact on the way I approach my various prayer and meditation disciplines that I have. So yeah, I can go up and down, and all I can do, and the best I can do, the closer I get to God, the more I practice this, the more aware I am of when these times are happening, and therefore I don't have to stay in them. I can pray to God, ask God, I can meditate about that, and I can even change something up. I can go online, I can go to my bookshelf, I can pull out another resource that might help me just shift my mind a little bit to pay attention to something a little differently in my discipline. But at least I'm more aware of it as I continue to grow. I don't have to go as far into the funk, if you will. And then I can not work my way out. I can be pulled out of it by this, again, renewed desire to know God better and better. Hope that helps.
Thanks, Ted. Okay, next up with a question is Veronica, followed by Pete. Veronica, good morning.
Thank you so much, Larry. Veronica C. here from New York. And thank you very much, Ken. I really appreciated what you had to say today. I've been focusing on ideals lately. And I know for myself that what has really worked for me is to be very specific about them. And because I'm finding that the more specific I can be, that allows me to encompass more of what I think that I need in the program, if that makes any sense. And what I'd like to know is, could you give me an idea of some of your ideals that are, you know, because it's mentioned in the big book, and I'd love to know what your ideals are because you do appreciate Step 11 so much.
Well, thank you.
That's funny.
Well, thank you, Ken. That's a great question. Ideals. One of them is to fully outgrow, again, ideal, my tendency towards negativity that I've had all of my life, and I can still do it today. I can get into just look at things from the from under, looking at them from the downside, and that's one of my ideals, is to be relieved of that and to learn how to and practice approaching situations, things I see in the news, relationships to other people from the positive side, looking at them through the eyes of God, as I understand God, and seeing through those eyes, seeing those people and those situations. And that doesn't mean I have to fully like those situations or that I agree that that's the way it has to be. It doesn't mean that, but it means that I'm looking at it from perspective of a higher ideal for myself, that I can possibly bring a positive spirit to.
And I don't know if that's me or not, but I was hearing some static on the line, broken up a little bit. I'm not sure if that was just me. You there, Ken?
I'm hearing clear, but am I still okay?
You know, at least on my end, you're still broken up there. I'm not sure.
All right.
If anybody else is.
How's this sound? Is this any better?
You sound good to me.
Okay.
We're good here. We're good.
Oh, Larry, well,
clear.
Larry, it must have something to do with the Bears. I don't know. you're getting interference there. Anyway, so that was one idea, one ideal that I have. Another has been, and I have received incredible healing, an ideal that I set a long time ago, because my language was so nasty for so many years, even in recovery, just nasty language, filth. And it took a long time to address that and to have that removed. And it remains an ideal that all that language that I hear regularly, and that my ideal is to not participate in it, not respond to it in any way that would encourage it to continue from someone else. And I set the idea, sometimes setting that ideal means I have to set some other things aside. And I know this is going to sound absolutely ridiculous to so many people, but I don't go to movies, period. It does. If it's G, I'll go. But anything else, I don't, because that's not a place I want to put myself. That's an ideal that I believe God has given for me, and that's a specific ideal just for me. I don't impose that upon anybody else. But that's one of those ideals that he's drawn me to, that my God has drawn me to pursue. And it's a gift. It's a gift beyond imagination when I look back at the way I used to be. And what that's done for me today is setting those ideals somewhat based on the character defects, if you will, the ones I want to get past, the things I don't want to be a part of me anymore. I look at God's and ask God for what would be the ideal in this situation, and aim for that. I hope that's helpful.
Thanks, Ken. And thanks for the question on that, Veronica. My apologies. Maybe that was my end of it, but I called back in. So the next question is from Pete, followed by Tony. Good morning, Pete.
Good morning, Larry. Thank you for taking the meeting. You do a great job. And Ken, thanks so much for your presentation. So, like, for me, a lot of times in my meditation practice, some thoughts that kind of drift in, are the manifestations of the disease. And early on, when you were talking, you had mentioned, you know, your other addictions, and then you also mentioned a allergy of.
I lost you.
Is your, how about now? Am I clear?
Yeah. Now you are.
What is the injurious aspect of food for the compulsive overeater? The fact that we're addicted to it, or that it triggers the phenomena of craving?
Yes. the food is. It took me a long time. It took the doctor's opinion to convince me that I had an allergy of the body. I thought it was related to everything else and everybody else who would not do it my way. The reality is the doctor's opinion made it clear, finally, that my body had a reaction to particular foods, just like it did to booze or whatever else I was involved in. That the food, specific foods, actually changed my physiology, and I triggered off this phenomenon of craving. No doubt about it. That's what ultimately is the issue with the addiction. The addiction. What I've been talking about today is living in and through the effects of that addiction. I don't put the food in that triggers the allergy, so I don't have the craving anymore. That's the gift of the doctor's opinion, as far as I'm concerned. That's the gift. Now I get to embrace, unwrap all of the other gifts that come as a result of accepting and embracing my powerlessness, and that a power greater than myself would restore me to sanity. And now I can believe in and have relationship with that power that takes me into a new life, a new abstinent life where the allergy never has a chance. And I'm grateful for that. Thanks.
Thanks, Pete. Okay, next up is Tony, followed by Sally. Tony, good morning.
Thank you, Larry. And thank you so much, Ken, for this wonderful presentation this morning. Can I ask you how you start with sponsees around, well, perhaps starting with sort of step two and then their step 11? And do you pray with your sponsees? Do you share your 11th step with them? That's my question.
Thank you, Tony. Good question. As I kind of following up on what I just responded to Pete, that when I start with sponsees, I start them in the doctor's opinion, because the reality is, and I found it true for me, and I've been finding it with others, that if the doctor's opinion is not ingested, and I'm going to use the word ingested, taken in, chewed on, all that, and accepted and processed for the depth of meaning that's there, i.e. allergy of the body leading to craving and the compulsion of the mind. That's where I start with them. As far as step two is concerned, I'm very firm about what step two says, and that it isn't about religion. And often we do step twos and get off on. It's not about that at all. It's about lack of power is my dilemma. And I come to believe that there is a power that will solve the dilemma. That's simple. That's where we have to start. And what that does, if I press that hard, you know, I believe if we embrace that, then we don't get bogged down with step three. We don't get bogged down and stuck in step two, trying to figure out DHP, power greater than myself, trying to figure it out and how I'm going to relate to it. That's not what it asks for. It just simply says that I believe there's something, period. And I try to drive that home so that we can move on into the rest of the steps that are going to eventually lead to the place where I can really work on developing and growing into the intimate relationship with the power that I have accepted all the way back in step two, but couldn't identify. Just that's kind of the way I look at things. Let's take things one step at a time. Let's not jump. It's too easy to jump out of the step into discussions about other things, like religion that we often hear in meetings. And then we hear stories about people's, in some cases, horrendous experiences with organized religion, and some that have excellent stories to tell us. But that's not what step two is about. And I want to get people grounded there so that they can move ahead into a spiritual exploration that isn't tainted, that isn't overloaded with baggage that we're carrying through. This is all moving in a new direction for me, and that I hope that's helpful. I'm not sure I answered the question, but that's where I go with it.
Thanks so much, Tony. Okay,
thanks,
Sally, before we go to you. Yeah, thanks, Tony. Sally, before we go to you next, I didn't give the share ID for Ken WH's presentation this morning. That number is 23,053. That's 23053. So let's go on to a question from Sally, followed by Chanel. Sally, good morning.
Thank you. Good morning, Larry, and thank you. Oh, Ken, this really has been a pleasure for me to listen to you this morning. And my question is about the last few sentences in the chapter of 88, page 88, where it says we are undisciplined, which I think all of us understand, undisciplined, disorganized, unmanageable, however you say it. So we let God discipline us in the simple way that we have just outlined. So I would like to hear about your morning routine, the discipline of when you get up. Do you get up with your wife? It talks about, you know, we can do it with a friend, we could do it with a wife. I really would like to hear the nuts and bolts about when you get up in the morning to have your morning discipline of prayer and meditation. I don't need you to go into the details of how you meditate or how you pray, but I really wanted to hear the order. Do you pray? Do you meditate 5 minutes? Do you read something? Do you go back to praying? That's what I would like to hear, is what is your way of meeting God in the morning?
Well, thank you. Excellent. Excellent questions. I once heard a fellow say that when he wakes up in the morning, he rolls out of bed onto his knees to pray because he says, I can get in trouble on my way to the bathroom. So first things first is he gets on his knees and he makes conscious contact. When I wake up, my wife and I get on our knees and we pray together. And we pray some specific prayers, and but we do that together, and we do it on our knees, and just first thing. That's the first thing. If I don't make contact with God right away, like the guy said, he can get in trouble on the way to the bathroom, and I can do that. I can start thinking about something else, and I can even forget to go back to pray because I'm already racing off into my supposedly important day and all the important things that I prepared that may not have any meaning to anybody. So that's first. And then interestingly enough, my second part of meditation is the 7 o'clock meeting every day. That's just locked in to my daily discipline of recovery. And so I'm at the meeting every day, 7 o'clock. So that's a part of my meditation, if you will. That's a part of my improving my conscious contact with God, because I'm listening to others with their successes and some of their struggles. And that helps me. That helps me to stay grounded in who I am. It makes me aware that I'm not that distant from active addiction. I'm further away from it than I used to be, but it's still there and it's still available to me, and I can choose at any moment to walk away from my what I have. So I stay in touch all day. So after the meeting, I'm into exercise. I go down and exercise. Sometimes I watch the news. Sometimes I just walk and exercise and just keep walking. And those are also times to appreciate what God's doing for me in my life. And some of the other things involve sharing so much with my wife. We actually like each other a whole lot, and we've been through 54 years of marriage and addiction and everything else that goes with it, but we actually like each other today a whole lot. So we spend time together, and that's meditative. We do things together. We attend spiritual activities together. We listen to music, especially some really beautiful music, together. That's part of my meditation through the day. And I just do my best to stay in touch regularly. I set my phone to ring several times during the day. That just stops me in my tracks and says, oh, there's the bell. How am I feeling? Where am I? What am I doing? What am I thinking about? Am I in a bad place? Am I in a great place? Well, share that with somebody. I do that several times a day. That's very helpful. So those are just a couple things, not real specific, but that's how I get my day started.
Thanks, Sally. Okay, Chanel number five. It's your turn. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks so much, Lori. Thank you for your service. And thank you, Ken. Hi, I'm Chanel T. in Washington State, grateful and recovered compulsive eater by the grace of God today. And you started to talk about the pause there, and that's my question. Can you tell me how you developed, because that's sometimes where I fall down, other than spot check inventory. I mean, there is a little bit of a pause in that in 10 steps. But for your specific 11-step practice, how did you develop? I think you said something about setting a thing on your phone. What does that look like for you to have that practice of knowing you're going to pause throughout the day, even when you have a whole bunch of busyness around you or you're in the middle of things? Thank you.
Pausing. Well, sometimes God makes it really obvious to me that I need to stop. That can happen when a conversation is not going in the direction it needs to go to be healthy. Those times when I start thinking too much and I'm not aware of what's going on around me and what the other person is expressing to me, I'm not listening. So those pauses, that stopping in the day, okay, Ken, you've just been racing around like crazy. You haven't been paying attention to anything else except what you are doing right at the moment. Take a break. Stop. Be aware of that. Be aware that you are so concentrating that if this bell hadn't gone off, you wouldn't have stopped for anything. So that just kind of calls me up short. Makes me aware that there are times I can be so distracted that I'm not aware, one, of what's going on around me. I might not be fully aware of how I am expressing myself, and that tends to be one of the worst problems, where I use nonverbal communication in a way that people are put off, or I have to go make amends for sometimes even. So I need to be those pauses are for awareness of what I'm doing, where I am, what's happening, who I am, and whose I am. it's sort of a cycle that runs that way, that, okay, Ken, take a deep breath. What you're doing is not the most important thing in the world right now. Right now, somebody else needs your attention. Pay attention. That's what it does. It calls me up. It tries to make me more aware of where I'm coming up short in my own endeavor towards an ideal of where I'm constantly aware, consciously aware of what's going on around me, and not so easily distracted by everything else outside. That's sort of what the process is.
Thanks for the question, Chanel. Okay, we have time perhaps for another couple of questions or so. See how it goes. Does anyone else have a question for Ken? Star one.
Elena C.
Okay. Let's go Hanayeta and Elena, and then we'll see where we're at. Hanayeta, good morning.
Good morning, Larry. Thank you so much for your service. And I have, okay, so Ken, first of all, Ken W., thank you so much for this phenomenal speech that you just did. Not speech, but talk from your heart. one of the very first things you said was complete abstinence. I think complete was the word, or total, or whatever word you use. And I always, people say that a lot. And I want to know what that means. Does that mean you never tasted a nothing in your lip? You've never, you know, had it on your finger and wiped it off? Does that mean you just never have had sugar, flour, fats, whatever your red light foods are, or your alcoholic foods are, whatever you call it? What does that actually mean? Because it's hard for me to think, because I know that I've had something on my finger, and I've licked it off. And I go, darn, I'm not supposed to do that. But, I mean, I don't think that's breaking my abstinence, but, you know, anyway, I have a hard time with that. So would you tell me what you mean by that?
Thank you, Hanayeta. I really prefer not to get into specifics of what abstinence means to you, what food plan means to you, or anybody else for that matter. All I know is there are certain foods and behaviors that lend themselves to active addiction. And I don't want to go back there. So for me, certain things, certain foods are completely off the list. And I don't test the waters. If I've got something on my finger, I know what's on my finger before it goes in my mouth. And if it's not supposed to be in my mouth, it's not going there. That's my way of looking at it. It's being really consciously aware of where these addictive allergic foods are for me, where they're hidden. I ask a lot. I live in a place where folk make food for me, and I tell them what needs to be in it and what not needs to be in it, and I'm very clear about that. And these folks are fantastic. They make the food the way I need to eat it and enjoy it, because they make it incredibly tasty without all the stuff that I thought I used to need, but that used to trigger me and send me flying. Now I can eat and enjoy it. I've heard somebody say that recently, where there's nothing wrong with enjoying my food. It just doesn't have any of the stuff that I thought made it enjoyable. It's just not necessary. It's not there. As an example, this is one of the funny things for me. I grew up in a house where the salt and pepper were on the table, and you sat down and you salted your food. Then you tasted it to see if you needed more salt. And that's what I learned from my dad. That's the way you ate your food. You put salt on, tasted it, and put salt on. I don't use salt at all today. That is something that's not, I don't even, and I don't miss it. It's gone. I know that people say it's just a seasoning, but for me, I couldn't get enough of it. So I don't eat it anymore at all. And I make sure it's not in my food. That's just planning ahead. That's just my way of staying on a food plan. Hope that helps.
Thanks, honey. It's okay with our last question. Drum roll, Elena. Did you think you'd get a drum roll?
Pum pum pum. Okay. We lost Elena.
Elena, did my drum roll scare you away?
Oh, did you call me?
Yes.
Yes, I did. Good morning, Elena.
Oh, okay. Hi, good morning. I was here, but I think I was unmuting as you called me. So thank both of you, Larry, for your service, and Ken W.H., thank you for your wonderful presentation. And what I am curious about is the last part of the 11th step, and how is a praying orderly for God's will and the power to carry it out. And I want to hear your perspective on it and how you carry this power throughout the day and what tools you're practicing to do that.
Wow. That's a huge question. That's another special edition, I think. It's a good question. It does sound weird to me, and it always did for a long time, for me to be praying for power. But it's not my power. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God, and by doing so, God's will for me becomes clearer and clearer. And God's will for me is to keep seeking His will. In other words, what would you have me do in this situation? How do you see this playing out, Lord, my God? As I speak to God, how do you see this playing out? And what do I need to do to be a part of that process? In other words, grant me whatever is needed, the power to do whatever it is that you see this spinning out to, how you see this proceeding. That's asking God constantly, what's next? What would God have me be? And I have to be able to answer that question. And, you know, if I'm involved in this process at all, I have to be able to answer that question constantly. What would God have me be in this situation? How would He have me respond? And I then just pray for the power to use the tools that He's made available to me to do that over the years. And it's not always easy, because I want to say, are you kidding? Is that what you really want me to say to that person? Well, sometimes, yes, that's exactly what needed to happen, and turns out to be the best and most effective approach to a situation. But it may not be what I had thought of. And then when that happens, then I know God's involved and we're in the right place. So I hope that's helpful in some way. That's all I got. Thanks.
All right. Well, that's Elena. Thanks for the question. And Ken, that's a wrap. We're so grateful for your presentation this morning and just taking the time. We really appreciate it. So thanks, Ken. And we're going to close, and then we're going to ask at the end of the recorded portion, we're going to ask Ken for his contact information in case you want to reach out to him. So let's go ahead now, and I'll give the share ID one more time, and then after the recording ends as well. The share ID for Ken W.H.'s presentation is 23,053. That's 23053. We're now going to close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164. And I'll do that now. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Here.
All right, I'm getting, turning my... Now let me click there. I don't have to get on the line, but
no,
I'll get on the computer.
Okay, and I'll tell you.
Yep.
Okay, you guys are unmuted. We just need to stop the recording.
All right, here
just
we go.
1 minute. Give me 1 minute.